All right, so this morning we're going to be discussing, as was just mentioned, the existence of the Mishnah before Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. And as Corey just told us emphatically, there was no such thing as Mishnah before Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, so we'll see pretty quickly that that wasn't true. But we're going to discuss exactly what the nature of the Mishnah was before Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, and want to sort of, the reason we're going on to this semi-tangent is because we were discussing last week exactly what it was that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi changed. That before, up until Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, we discussed at length how up until Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the teaching of Torah she'be'al peh was done al peh, was done only orally, and the everyone would write it for themselves. Yeah, they're gonna turn it off in a minute. This is the second one they've had already.
Probably their omelet bar.
How about if I'll go as a volunteer and find out what's going on?
I was there 5 minutes ago.
Or maybe now the omelets are really on fire. Chas v'shalom. Mr. Golgar is going to find out.
May I have your attention, please?
I think the fire department is actually good.
It's really good here. I'm learning.
Maybe we should just do our shear on the park.
Ah. You're going the wrong way. Everyone's supposed to be leaving. You're coming in. The fire alarm is not happy with the omelets. Are they planning on turning it off?
are they planning on moving the omelet station?
Is this
after the second time? If it's any comfort to you, the rabbi Rosenbaum went back inside with his class. He was outside with his class and then went back in.
Okay.
We do have a back stairway.
Yeah. I'm more concerned about them turning off the alarm. This is, like, annoying.
Just talk very loudly.
So anyways, okay, fine. So we'll just see what we can do. All right. So we discussed We discussed in our previous discussion how Rabbi Yehuda Anasi had changed the method of transmission of the Torah she'be'al peh, that it was taught al peh. However, each person would write for themselves their own notes. The Nasi who was teaching would have his own notes. He would not teach from his notes. He would have his notes just to remind him to review whatever it was, but he would always teach Baal Peh without the notes. And that was the method of the transmission of Torah Baal Peh. So what Rabbi Yehuda Anasi changed was that now there was a canonized text of the Torah Baal Peh. This can't be pleasant for their little breakfast either.
No, especially apparently they paid a lot of money to get into this.
So there was no canonized text of the Torah Rishbal Peh, which was passed from one generation to the next. Each generation, the Torah Rishbal Peh was taught by the Nasi and was determined by the Nasi. What the Nasi taught, that was the Torah Rishbal Peh for that generation. Wanted to just kind of discuss exactly what we say that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi wrote the Mishnah. What really do we mean when we say that? So we'll see pretty quickly that there was clearly such a thing as Mishnah before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. If you look, our very first source here is a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Mishnah in Pirkei Avos is quoting Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema was long before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema says, Hu haya omer ben chamesh shanim lamikra, ben eso shanim lamishna. Ben shal shanim lamitzvos, right? And goes through the whole famous every age, what every age is masugal for, what every age is conducive for. But that he says that when you're 10 years old is when you start learning Mishnah. So there is something which was called Mishnah before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi.
But he also said Ben Chamesh Asrim Gemara.
Right. There was certain. Well, so Gemara was we saw a while ago that what Gemara is defined as the discussion of the logic behind the Mishnah. The Mishnah is the halachos, and the Gemara is the discussion of the svaras, the comparing and contrasting and extrapolating from those dinim. That was what Gemara is, and we'll discuss hopefully by the end here when we say Gemara now, do we mean the same thing as Gemara then? Yes.
How do you know that the thing described as Mishnah here is not just a word that they use in general.
In general,
like
for what?
All throughout Mishnah and Gemara. When they go, they have the back and forth discussion, they say sometimes the answer, the question is, oh, this is just a general term. It doesn't mean what you think it means. It's not the specific term.
Yeah.
So maybe it could just mean like oral Torah. You're saying that the word Mishnah means a set body of teachings, correct?
That's what the rabbi is implying, yes.
So how do you know?
So we'll see in a minute. We'll go further.
Just like what he said, Gemara.
No, but similar.
You say.
Yeah.
Gemara is a general term for explaining the Mishnah. But to us, it's a term that means the Talmud.
Right.
Or it could be.
Yeah. So Mishnah certainly did not mean the Mishnah that we have. That's for sure true. But the Mishnah does seem to refer to a set body of information. Now, just to note. The Rambam himself when the Rambam uses the word for example in the Gemara in Kiddushin that says that you should spend a third of your time on Mikra, a third of your time on Mishnah, and a third of your time on Gemara, the Rambam reads that to mean a third of your time on Torah Shebichsav and a third of your time on Torah Shebaal Peh. The Rambam always translates the term Mishnah into Torah Shebaal Peh. However, the Rambam himself, we've seen, understands the term Torah Shebaal Peh does not just mean anything which was not written down, but was a very specific body of information. That was what we spent some time discussing at the beginning of this class. But we'll see in a moment that it's clear that there is something called Mishnah, which is before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. But here you see that there's at least the term Mishnah is before Buda. Nassian, we'll see that it's referring to specific information. Yes.
A side question. Do we take these years literally? Like that this is halakha, like you have to do this?
No.
Okay, so how do you take it? Because I got into a big debate over Shabbos. Someone said, you have to be married at 18. It says right here in the Mishnah. You're going against the Torah. He said to me, you're going against the Torah if you're not advising people to get married at 18.
Okay.
So how do I respond to that?
You tell him that we don't start learning Mishnah at 10 and we don't start learning Gemara at 15. And
so his response would be that, but you should be.
Okay.
So what it says in the Torah.
Right. So the question on that, well, I mean, I don't, we could have this discussion at greater length at a different time, exactly how I feel you should respond to such a person. But at the end of the day, the answer is that these are, I guess, what we call advisements of when a person has reached an appropriate point for such a thing. Not necessarily mean that this is when it, right. By marriage itself, it happens to be the Gemara has a discussion in Kiddushin and Daf Lamed and Beis, I think it is. The Gemara there discusses the appropriate age to get married. This is 18, 20. The Gemara there actually says that by 20, says as a halachic statement that a person should be married by 24. These things are...
How can the Mishnah say 18 and the Gemara says
20? Well, there's different opinions, basically. Well, so the Gemara is giving an end date. And the Mishnah is giving seemingly some kind of recommendation for when a person is, you know, mature enough for such a thing. But just like by Mishnah, if a kid is capable of learning Mishnah before he's 10, so you don't have to wait till he's 10. And if a kid's not capable of learning Mishnah by the time he's 10, you're not going to force it on him when he's not there. But these are general.
Maybe this is just for that generation. Can you just answer that way?
It could be. You wouldn't really expect something to be established in, you know, a Mishnah like Pirkei Avos, which is, you know, seemingly full of all kinds of ethical, moral, timeless statements. But it's not impossible. It's not impossible. All right. Did anyone else have a... Okay. So, step one, it does seem that there was such a thing as Mishnah before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. If you turn the page, this is one snippet of a much longer discussion. In the next Amud, the Gemara brings examples of other Mishnah Gemara here in Bava Kamma, in Daf Tzadi Dalet Amud Beis. So the Gemara has a certain question on a Mishnah, on a Braisa, whatever it is. And the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, B'yamei Rebbe Nishnis Mishnazu. D'tanya, Mais Ba'ad Mechad, and it has a whole story going through how this happened in the time of Rebbe. I didn't make as many source sheets today because I wasted more paper making my packets, so you could share with me. That the Gemara says that this Mishnah was written in the days of Rebbe, which certainly implies that some Mishnayos were written in the days of Rebbe, and some Mishnayos were from before the time of Rebbe. And then the Gemara brings a Braisa to show that this story happened. It says, Mais Ba'adam Echad, and it brings a whole story of something that happened in the time of Rebbe. But in any case, just for our purposes, the point being that the Gemara identifies that, oh, this Mishnah is in the time of Rebbe. The Gemara goes on to bring on Tzadi Hey Amid Beis or Tzadi Vav to bring examples of Mishnayos which were not taught in the time of Rebbe, which were taught before the time of Rebbe. So there was such a thing as Mishnah, as actual halachic formulated statements from before Rebbe, which were included in something called Mishnah. So there was something before Rebbe Yehuda Nasi. There was something called Mishnah, which included, you know, specific halachic statements. And we'll get in a moment to exactly what that was, but just one or two more things before we get to discussing it. On the next page, if you ignore all of the boxes and scribbles and stuff on the page, because this was photocopied from my own Gemara. So the Gemara here is, this is the second Amud of Perek HaZahav, and the Gemara here is discussing whether the first line of the Perek says, HaZahav Kone Es HaKesev, which means Zahav can be used, gold can be used to acquire silver, and silver cannot be used to acquire gold, which basically means, would be a statement which means that gold is a commodity and silver is a currency. That's what that would mean. That therefore you can buy, you can use gold to buy to make a kenyan on the silver, but you can't use the silver to make a kenyan on the gold. The Gemara brings an account of two conflicting versions of this Mishnah. One version says Azav Kone Es HaKesef. The other one said HaKesef Kone Es Azav. And the Gemara wants to know. Ends up saying one was the way Rebbe taught it in his youth, the other was the way Rebbe taught it when he got older. But the Gemara wants to know which one is more definitive. So the Gemara says, the Gemara brings a proof from the next line of the Mishnah. The Gemara says that look at the next line of the Mishnah. The next line of the Mishnah says, "And Nechoshes Kones Kesef." I don't want to get into the intricacies of the proof. But the Gemara basically, based on the next line of the Mishnah, wants to prove what the previous line of the Mishnah should be. And the question is very simple, that Rebbe wrote it. So whatever the next line says, if Rebbe wrote the previous line, he wrote whatever he wrote. You'll work at, you'll make sense of it however you will. Maybe you'll say the next line would have been changed also when the first line was changed. However you'll work it out, what are you going to try and prove from the next line of the Mishnah? It's Rebbe's own writing, so you're not going to prove against Rebbe from Rebbe's own writing. So what is the Gemara trying to prove? So Rashi here explains, look at the top left here, Rashi says, Ki yalduse mistabra, the Gemara says, the way Rebbe said it when he was younger makes more sense. Devadai kain kibla meirabo Rebbe Meir. This was certainly the way he received the Mishnah from his Rebbe, Rebbe Meir. Shastam Mishnah Shalo, because your average Mishnah was from Rebbe Meir. Mid Asni Bahada Nechoshes Kone Es HaKesef, and from the fact that he had taught in this Mishnah Hazahav Kone Es HaKesef. Nechoshes Kone Es HaKesef. Not again ignoring how exactly the proof is, but says Rashi that from the next line of the Mishnah, which Rebbe received from Rebbe Meir, there you can see what the more sensible or logical version of the Mishnah should be. So we're proving the way the Mishnah should be from the line of the Mishnah, the next line of the Mishnah, because that's the way he received the Mishnah. And therefore, if that's the way they received the Mishnah, even within Mishnayis that Rebbe himself wrote, there is still the way it, quote-unquote, should be, what it should say. How can you have a what it should say if he's the one who wrote it? Because he's not the one who entirely wrote it. We'll say, talk in a moment exactly what it means when we say that Rebbe wrote the Mishnah. But there were things in the Mishnah which were not by Rebbe, and things in the Mishnah which came from before Rebbe, which are even authoritative in trying to figure out Rebbe's own opinion. So we have such a thing as Mishnayos, which were received by Rebbe, which made it into the Mishnayos that we have. One more. See my source sheets before we one more example before we discuss a little bit, and then we'll go a drop further. So the Mishnah, this is the Gemara in towards the beginning of Baba Kama. This is the on Daf Vav Amud Beis. So the Gemara here says the quote from the Mishnah is kishahizik chav hamazik, when it damages the mazik is chav, which is supposed to mean that he's responsible, but the word chav is a funny word. The Gemara says chav hamazik chayiv hamazik mi baile, that the mazik is chayiv, the mazik is now obligated, is responsible to pay. That's what it should say. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Hai Tana Yerushalmi Hu. This is a Yerushalmi Tana. I'm sorry. This is a Yerushalmi Tana. The author of this Mishnah is a Yerushalmi. Ditani Lishna Kalila, who taught a much looser kind of language, a different dialect, and therefore the wording of this Mishnah is not, you know, the normal expression that you expect to find. Just turn one more page. The Maritz Chayas here.
So what's that?
Explains. So what's going on here? So if you see on the bottom half of the page on the left, there's a little bracketed paragraph. So the Maritz Chayas here says, Yadanu, we know, Daharbe Mishnayos Hayu Sidurim Adayin Kodem Rebbe, that we know that many Mishnayos were arranged before the time of Rebbe. Kemo Meseches Midos Nizdera Alidei Rav Elazar Ben Nechunya, maybe. Rabbi Lozman Yaakov. Women sat as Kalim Bishlei Musa Haisa Dain Sadura Kodem Rebbe Kemosha Dikdik Agon Baal Chacham Tzvi. And the entire Maseches Kalim Seder Kalim was all put together before Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, like the as the Chacham Tzvi, which will be our next source, which we'll get to soon. Explained the Amar Biyosi Ashrecha Kalim Shenichnasta Batuma V'Yatzasa Batara, that Rabbi Yosi, who is before Rabbi Yehuda, said, Kalim, you are a praiseworthy Masechta because you start with Tuma and you end with Tara. So you see that the even the order, not only the halachos, but the order of those halachos was already in place before Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Vehine Shlosha Mishnayas Elu Shebepirkov Hainu Arba Avos V'Kol Shechavti U'Mishna Deshum Kesef. That these first three Mishnayos of Baba Kama, Mishunam Mishar HaMishnayos Hain, they are different, linguistically different from other Mishnayos. Alide Loshon Kitzara, they have a very brief, shortened kind of language. Vehein Bishinoi Haloshon Kasher HaMa'ayin Yakir V'Yavin. They have variations of linguistic variations. If you look at them closely, you'll see. Gemara hochrechu lefarish velidrosh kol milakan umidak dekashas the high tana Yerushalmihu. That and the Gemara is forced to conclude that this tana is a different tana. Hainu shemishnayis elu, these mishnayis ba'u mi chacham Yerushalmi, came from a Yerushalmi chacham asher hayatofis lashon kitzara, who used a very brief, concise kind of language. Vehichnisam Rabbeinu Hakadosh b'seder shelo, and Rabbi Yehuda Anasi put these mishnayis as they were into his seder. Vehinicham kamosha matzam velo zazumim kom. He left them the way he found them, and they did not change. They were not altered from the way in which he got them. So, just to pause for a moment, before we pause for a moment, let's see the Chacham Tzvi, and then we'll pause for a moment, just because the Chacham Tzvi is somewhat of a follow up, even though it came before the Maratz Chayes. But
what's this for the Tzvi? The Rabbi Tzvi versus
Chayes. So the Maratz Chayes was a Maharatz Chayes.
Maharatz Chayes.
Yeah. So the Maratz Chayes was in the late 19th century, early 20th century. He was actually accused by many of being a maskil, of being a part of the Enlightenment. He is a lot of academic kind of discussions. This kind of discussion about the structure and nature and origins of the Mishnah are not strange to find in the Maratz Chayes. But he was vindicated at some point, and he has a number of svarim written about what we'd often refer to as more academic discussions. But so he actually has a whole sefer called Mevo HaTalmud where he discusses a lot of these things. But the last thing here before we try and put some things into context here. So the Chacham Tzvi in Simen Yud here. So he was asked a certain question about the rule that we have in the Mishnah, which is that that there's a halacha that Mishnas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov kav v'naki, which means the Mishnayis, that the opinion of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov in the Mishnah is, whatever it means, kav v'naki, basically means is very good, and we generally paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov in his opinions in the Mishnayis. There's a question of whether or not that halacha extended to Baraisas, and the author of this letter to the Chacham Tzvi wanted to argue that it did not apply to Baraisas and had certain examples and proofs, and the Chacham Tzvi wants to take it a step further than what he says. You're right, but it really goes further than what you said. And if you look at the second paragraph, here's his tshuva. Hadavar mochra mimikomo shaharei Shimon ben Azai shemata kasev mimegilas star in Mishnas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov kavanaki. Rabbi Shimon ben Yaakov, Shimon ben Azai, who found it written on an old scroll that it said this rule, this principle of Mishnas Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov kavanaki, haya harbe kodem shasi the Rebbe es Mishnayis. That was long before Rabbi Yehuda Anasi arranged the Mishnayos. Va'afsha kodem Rabbi Hayagam came Seder Mishnayos, and there was certainly in a Seder of Mishnayos from before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. K'namrin v'chagiga Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema v'chaver shayu shonen sheish me'o sidre Mishnah. That Rabbi Yehuda ben Tema and his friends, they had, and his peers, they had 600 Seders, Sedarim of Mishnayos. We have 6 Sedarim, they had 600. There's a discussion in the Rishonim, in the Gaonim, and the Rishonim of when that changed. There are some who say that changed by Hillel and Shammai. There are some who say that changed by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. But that there certainly in earlier generations was such a thing as the Mishnah, and the Mishnah was actually more expansive. There were 600 Sedarim of Mishnayos. Rabbi Yossi Shai Rabo Shel Rabbi. Rabbi Yossi, who was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's Rabbi, Amar Basov Kalim, Ashrecha Kalim Shinisknasta Batumma Vyatsas Vatara. That was the quote we saw in the Maratz Chayis, that he said that Mesechus Kalim, you're a praiseworthy Mesechta, because you start with Tum and end with Tara. He was Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's Rabbi. He was before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Demuchach Shaya Seder Mishnah Kodem Lachen. So you see from there that there was certainly an arrangement of Mishnah before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Afal Pichein Adavar Pashut She Rabbi Hosith Vigara. That Rabbi added things and removed things. Afal Pichein Adavar Fari. They came and tried to Kodem Rabbi Yehuda Mishnah. Rabbi Yehuda Gavanaki Al Kain Lava Mishnah. Rabbi Fine. And therefore he says it's the rule of the purpose why he's bringing this, not our point, but the purpose he's bringing it, he says, and therefore the rule of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Kavanaki has nothing to do with Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi's Mishnayos. It's a rule in general about what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and it doesn't apply necessarily to everything you find in a Mishnah, because it's a rule that preceded Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and Rabbi Yehuda Nasi added and subtracted from the Mishnayos, and it was said about a previous version, iteration of Mishnayos, which existed before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, so you can't necessarily apply it so willy-nilly, so carte blanche, to the Mishnayos of Rabbi, as we have them today, to Paskin, so simply like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Fine. So we have this idea, and the last thing we're going to see is some sources about exactly how far back this idea of having a Mishnah goes and having remnants of that Mishnah. But we have an idea that there was such a thing as a Mishnah before Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So what does it mean? What is the nature of Mishnah? And what does it mean that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, you know, what do we mean when we say Rabbi Yehuda Nasi wrote the Mishnah? We just saw the Chacham Tzvi said he was Hosif Vigara. What do we mean when we say that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi authored the Mishnah?
You redact.
So we discussed last week, and it's come up a number of times, we discussed it in depth last week, that Rabbi Yehuda, that the role of the Nasi was that in every generation, the Torah Sheba'al Peh was taught to that generation and explained to that generation as that generation needed it. So in every generation, the Nasi received the Mesorah of the Torah Sheba'al Peh from the previous Beis Din and taught it to the next Beis Din, taught it to his generation, according to what needed to be explained to his generation in the terms that his generation needed it. We've explained that that's why the Torah Sheba'al Peh was meant to remain Ba'al Peh, was so that there was always a current, up with the terms of the times, explanation of the Torah being given for that generation, for that culture and era, in the terms that they use, and therefore in every generation the Torah Sheba'al Peh was retaught and redefined by the way in which the Nasi of that generation taught it. So he took what he learned from the previous generation and he taught it to his own generation. And the greatest of his students would be the Gadol of the next generation, received what he learned from the previous Nasi. Now he teaches it, he reteaches it to his generation. But in each generation, what the Nasi teaches his generation, that is the Mishnah of that generation. That is the Torah Sheba'al Peh of that generation. and the way in which he teaches it, the expressions with which he teaches it, that is the Roshem, that is the corpus of Mishnah for that generation. What everyone's supposed to learn is that. There's what everyone should be studying is what the Nasi of that generation is teaching. And what is Gemara for each generation? Gemara of each generation is the pilpul, is the discussion of the Mishnah of that generation. Whatever the Nasi of that generation taught is the Mishnah of that generation. And the discussion, understanding how to fit and how to understand and how to apply whatever the Nasi says, that's the Gemara of that generation. Every generation had a Mishnah and had a Gemara, and the Mishnah was established by what was being taught to that generation. Now you could have, obviously, plenty of things which the Nasi has received from the previous generation, which need no further explanation for this generation, either because there's nothing different, or it doesn't apply at all to this generation. So why bother changing it to updated expressions for something which doesn't have any application?
No, but you still have to communicate the body of knowledge. I mean, there's an accepted body of knowledge that happens, and then there are issues that come up in each generation. Why would you not write down the acceptance?
No, not that he would ignore it, but he wouldn't bother updating it. For example, we saw that Rabbi Yossi said, what? He would teach it exactly the way he received it. Right? So he was teaching everything. The question is, in what form did he teach it? If he taught something exactly, he received a Mishnah exactly in a certain form, he was taught, you know, we have an idea, it says Chayv Adam Lashanos Belashon Rabo, that a person is ideally supposed to teach something in the words of his Rebbe. If the words of your Rebbe don't come across to the people you're teaching to, then obviously you'll teach it in words that they'll understand. But other than that, you should be teaching things in the language, in the expression that you heard them in. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasi would be teaching something in the way, or every Nasi would be teaching something as much as possible the way in which he received it. Things that needed to be explained or things that needed to be added would be obviously in new terminology, but everything else. So for example, Seder Kalim. Kalim is all these laws of Tumah and Taharah to these very, very specific types of equipment. The laws of Tumah and Taharah, so they were Noheg, the Chaverim were Noheg Tumah and Taharah, even Bechulin. But for the most part, by the time you get to Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, there's no Beis HaMikdash anymore. There's no Parah Adum anymore. There's no way to become Tahor anymore. The laws of Tumah and Taharah are for a large part inapplicable. They're unexecutable. So when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi teaches those Mishnayos, he really has no reason to change them because they don't need to be updated for his generation. They're not applicable to his generation. He's still going to teach them because they're still Torah, but they're not going to be changed. So when we have a Seder Kalim, which appears exactly as it did for the generations before, that's because when Rabbi Yehuda Nasi taught his Mishnah, he didn't change that. And there are plenty of things which Rabbi Yehuda Nasi had no need to alter from the way in which he was Mekabel them, which would then remain the Mishnayos of previous generations, which are just inserted into Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's Mishnayos. But Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's Mishnayos are not Mishnayos because of the previous generations. They're only Mishnayos because he taught them. For his Mishnah is only a Mishnah because he taught it. Whether or not it was taught in the previous generation, only if he's bringing it to his generation, every Beis Din has the responsibility of Ki Mitzion Tetzei Torah, that Torah is coming from the Beis Din HaGadol of that generation. So every Beis Din, every Nasi of each Beis Din HaGadol, he's establishing what Torah Shebaal Peh is for his generation, for his dar, and therefore whatever he teaches, if he teaches it in the same way, so you have the Mishnah that he copied over orally, and if you have it, he changed it, so now it's a new Mishnah. It's going to be the same halacha, but it's going to be a new Mishnah because the way in which he articulated it, the way in which he expressed it, the terms which he used are going to be different. That happened until the time of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. what Rabbi Yehuda Nasi changed was that which in every generation prior you retaught the Mishnah according to whatever the expressions were for that time, and it remained oral. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi said, no, now we're writing it down, and now the exact words are codified. The change from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was not the fact that there is a Mishnah, and not the fact that there was a Mishnah which was specific halachas which were passed on, but the fact that the way in which those halachas are taught is now codified, is now canonized. There is a specific formulation of language which is now written down in order that it not be corrupted. Because if we keep it oral and everybody's supposed to teach it the way that they got it, it's going to be corrupted because we don't have the infrastructure and the stability to maintain this oral tradition. We're writing it down. Once it's written down, we're codifying it. It's being closed. It's being sealed so that it doesn't get corrupted. Now we have exact words, exact phrases. This is the Mishnah, and what everyone should be teaching and learning from now on is this. So when the Mishnah now refers to, the Mishnah is the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, and the Talmud is the Gemara discussing the Mishnah of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. So when we say the Gemara, we're referring to the Gemara, because now, once Rabbi Yehuda Nasi has sealed it, has closed it, has set it to be determined and stable, now there is only one Talmud, which is the Talmud, which is the discussion of the Mishnayos of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. So how do Braisos fit into this? So Braisos are basically teachings which were not canonized by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, which does not necessarily mean that they weren't taught by Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. It might mean that, but it means that they certainly were not written down into what Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Part of what Rabbi Yehuda Nasi certainly did, and you'll find this in many Rishonim, is that he decided which Mishnayos or which teachings of Tanaim were authoritative and accepted, and which ones were more outside of which were not as not necessarily wrong, but which were not as well established. So Braisa literally means Bar Isa, means the outsiders, right? They're the teachings which were outside of the Mishnah. They didn't make it into the Mishnah. They're still teachings of Tanaim, and they still that's why you'll have much more often where the Amoraim will play with the language of a Braisa. They'll say, no, it shouldn't say this, it should say this, Potter, whatever, right? They'll alter the language because it wasn't as canonized. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, he said, this is the language, you wrote it down, this is what it should say, and only this. In rare occasions you'll have where there's still discussion about what the Mishnah should say, but for the overwhelming majority, the Mishnah was a set words of what it should say. Baraisas remained not canonized, and therefore they weren't as authoritative after Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. Fine. So the idea of basically what Rabbi Yehuda Nasi was doing was he was codifying the Mishnah, the Torah Shebaal Peh, as it reached him. He was taking that and he was doing the same exact thing that everyone before him had done, reteaching it in his own words and reestablishing and redefining the Mishnah, only now he made his redefinition permanent. And he said, this is the words that the Mishnah should be in. I just want to see one last thing. It says, just somewhat of an interesting note, doesn't really affect our discussion, but if you look on the next page, I actually combined two pages together here. This is my one effort to save paper even when I was in my hurry. This is a famous parak of Mishnayos. This is the Mishnayos that many people say at the beginning of Shachris, the parak of Ezehu Mekoman, the fifth chapter of Zvachim. So the Mishnah here says, Sheyari Hadam Hayashofeh al Yesod Deromi, V'ne'echalim, and they are eaten lifnim minakalayim, within the curtains. What is the curtains? The curtains were the separation between the Kodesh and the Chatzar in the Mishkan, not in the Beis HaMikdash. What is this Mishnah doing referring to the Mishkan? Right? This is a Mishnah. It should be talking about the Beis HaMikdash. So says the Tiferes Yisrael, Od Nirli, on the very bottom, I have it underlined, Od Nirli, De Muchach Mikan, De Kol Berek Zeh, Mi De Ein Bo Machlokes, Ku Balashon Mamish, Kemosh Nimsar Lanu, Mi Moshe Rabbeinu Alav Shalom, Mi Sinai. This Mishnah remains in its language, its original language, all the way back from Moshe Rabbeinu. V'lahachi nakat kilayim. That's why it refers to the kilayim, because this Mishnah remains unchanged. There is no machlokis, right? That's the whole, that's what he says. Umei high time orim perek zeh b'chol yom. That's why we say this parak at the beginning of Shachas, is because this parak never had any machlokis about anything in it. It never had anything machlokis about anything in it. It remained perfectly clear. There was never any reason to clarify anything in this parak. Therefore, nothing was ever altered. Nothing was ever changed. It was merely just taught from one generation to the next, unchanged from its original form. Therefore, it still has somewhat of a of an artifact, a reference to the Kilayim, because the Mishnah remained unchanged, because there was no need to clarify anything further in this Mishnah, and therefore it remained. But the point for our discussion, Mishnayos started from Moshe Rabbeinu. Who had the first Mishnah? Was the first Nasi? Was Moshe Rabbeinu? Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching to Yoshua. Was a Mishnah. Was a Seder Sedarim of Mishnayos. Yoshua would have retaught them, and how whatever changes were necessary to express them to his dar. But the first Mishnayos came from Moshe, and you can have such a thing as a Mishnah, which still exists intact from Moshe Rabbeinu. We have one more source like this, which is the Chidushei Haran in Shabbos, quoting from Rabbeinu Yehonasan. And the Ran here is discussing why the Mishnah specifically isolates talking about the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. It says, Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah Nimol Shnei Masar. That if a child was born on one of the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, or his bris was going to be on one of the 2 days, whatever the case is, but it's the two days of Rosh Hashanah, the Shnei Yamim Tovim Rosh Hashanah. That halacha is not a halacha that has anything to do specifically with Rosh Hashanah. It applies to any 2 day Yom Tov. So why is it talking specifically about Rosh Hashanah? So says the Ran, quoting Rabbeinu Yehonasan, V'had Nakat Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah, that which we say the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, Lefi Shekisha Nishnas Mishnah Zu, Miyamos Moshe Rabbeinu, when this Mishnah was taught in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, Lo Hayu Mistapkim El B'Rosh Hashanah Bilvad, the only suffix that they had for a 2 day Yom Tov was Rosh Hashanah. Because Rosh Hashanah is, Yom Tov is on the day of Rosh Chodesh, so there's no way to get the message out. So that one is somewhat definitionally a suffix, and that fact has ramifications for halacha. But there was no other Yom Tov that had a 2 day Yom Tov. Lefisha imbo Adim in a minchah l'malah, you know, so Yom Kodesh l'malchah Kodesh. That's the since the Adim could come in the afternoon and say that they saw that it's Rosh Chodesh. So therefore, they treated 2 days as Rosh Hashanah every year, in a just kind of because there's no other choice. But this Mishnah was written in a time when that was the only suffix, because that was the only day when they had to have a 2 day Yom Tov in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. This Mishnah, since it was taught in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu and remains unchanged since then, keeps the case that Moshe Rabbeinu taught it about. But the Mishnah then gets taught generation by generation. If there's no reason to change it, there was nothing that needed to be clarified, so the Mishnah remains as it was received in the exact Lashon that it was taught to Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's not a problem. We have Mishnayos, which made it into the Seder of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi from the Mishnayos of Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's not a problem. Rabbi Yehuda Nasi's job was not to make up a new Mishnah. His job was to teach his Mishnah, was to teach the same corpus of halacha as it was necessary and needed and applicable and understood and relatable to his generation. So when that involved rephrasing things, adding things, sometimes even subtracting things, then that was what was done. But if it did not, then it wasn't done. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda Nasi changed was not the nature of defining a Mishnah for your generation. The only thing that he changed was he defined his Mishnah for all future generations. And that was the Chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, was to change the Tzura, the format of the transmission of Torah Shebaal Peh, that starting from Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, now Torah Shebaal Peh is Bichsav, is now written down at least partially, and there's a set canonized language to the halachos that are being taught in every generation.